Automotive engineers used to say we can improve any part except the nut behind the wheel. That could also apply to cybersecurity. Thanks to social engineering, people become the weakest link in a carefully constructed defense. The FBI found that out the hard way when it lost personal information on 20,000 employees. For how this might have been prevented, we turn to Trevor Hawthorne, Chief Technology Officer at Wombat Security Technologies. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
In this particular case, it looked like someone was able to simply call up an operator, help desk, and say, I need a token to get into a server. And they got the token over the phone and went into the server.
Yeah, that seems to be the gist of it. You know, the complete details aren't 100% public, but, you know, the kind of important takeaway here is that two-factor authentication that provides you the token is, you know, supposed to prevent these types of attacks.
But in this case, it wasn't just simply one's own account that this person was trying to get into. They were trying to get into an account that had administrative privileges over a network. And
sure.
Even a two-factor system, why would you be able to get that over the phone, I guess, is the question that comes up.
Right. So from what's publicly known is that the attacker had somebody's username and password. And so they were able to leverage that in order to gain access to some sort of central server. They were then seemingly presented with a two-factor authentication prompt. They called the help desk, and they gave them some sort of token, which allowed them access. You know, once you're inside of the system, you know, and the attacker wants to do a privilege escalation attack to gain access to even more things, that's something where two-factor won't really help you.
It sounds like the operator that gave out that token didn't have any mechanism for challenging the identity of the person on the other end of the line.
I think that a lot of times people, we become a little bit reliant and kind of complacent on the technical security controls that we've invested in and deployed in our networks. And, you know, those controls only work as long as the attacker plays by the rules. And as, you know, a lot of warfighters say, it's always important to remember that the enemy gets a vote, okay? And so if the attacker intentionally basically drives around your technical controls, you really are relying back on users and on the humans that operate the technology.
What are some mechanisms that can stop someone from responding to a socially engineered entryway? What can organizations do? What can agencies do?
I've been doing this for 20 years, and there's a lot of really great technology out there, and the technology continues to get better and better, which basically just forces the attacker to have to try to drive around it. And so at the end of the day, I think that we have to train your users, whether that is somebody, you know, just, you know, doing administrative work all the way up to the folks that are the administrators over critical systems, to basically not just blindly trust or to not be completely reliant on just the technical controls. As I mentioned earlier, when the attacker gets a vote. And so calls like, you know, that ask for things like token codes or other parts of the employee's day that intersect with security should undergo greater scrutiny. And you want to kind of train your users, your employees, your administrators to have a sort of muscle memory that when they have a critical juncture or a security-sensitive operation that they're being asked to complete, whether it be clicking on a link in an email or whether it be giving out a token code over the phone, that they're sensitive to that is one of the vulnerabilities that attackers will often exploit.
It seems, by most published accounts, that the social engineered attack has become the most prevalent vector for getting into systems. Is that what you're finding?
Yes. If you look at the data in, for example, like the Verizon data breach report, or anecdotally, look at any news article on any recent breach, all the ones that we all hear about, and do a control F and search for the word phishing, you know, phishing. And this is basically the preferred attack vector that the bad guys use. And that's because, you know, if you look back in the 90s, everybody was breaking into networks. And so what do? We have great firewalls and good network security controls. And then people started going after the web applications. And so the industry responded. And it really has forced the attacker to take advantage of what everyone loves to talk about. It's the weakest link. And, you know, at the end of the month, we're going to be out at the RSA show. It's the huge industry security conference, and all of the technology vendors, they're all there. And they've all been working, and we've all been working hard to create technology that solves this problem, and yet here we are talking about breaches just like this. And so, yes, the human continues to be part of the weakest link. And from an investment and a focus from a defender standpoint, from the security manager standpoint, the user has kind of been sort of ignored. The same maturity that we see in the technology that the industry has kind of come up with, we haven't seen the same approach in the sort of like human risk management or the user risk management part of the industry. And that's something that I think needs to change.
We're speaking with Trevor Hawthorne, Chief Technology Officer at Wombat Security Technologies. And so to help ensure that your employees don't respond to phishing attacks, and they can be very well crafted nowadays and look like they're coming from someone you know well, let me make an analogy. There was a spate of problems when people were calling homes impersonating the IRS, and people were giving up information that way. And the IRS said, we never call people on the phone and ask for personal information. It's something the IRS simply does not do. Is there something that management in an agency should say, we never do this on email, such that when people see it happening on email, they'll know it's phishing?
Sure. There are several kind of key indicators that we ask users to basically look at. And will this always prevent the risk 100% of the time? No, but that's what risk management is all about. So the sort of key indicators that I would tell any user would be, don't just quickly click on links or attachments out of your email. We've all been trained to be very responsive and to kind of react right when we see something pop into our inbox, but it's important that the user slow down for just two heartbeats. We're not asking users to become cybersecurity experts. Slow down for just 2 seconds. Look at the context of the email. Is the sender asking you to do something that is out of the ordinary? You know, is there a malicious call to action in the email? I need you to do this. Does it elicit in some type of emotion? If anything in the message doesn't just feel quite right, pick the phone, call the sender if you know them, or, you know, maybe don't click on it. Talk to your help desk, talk to the security officer within your agency to figure out if this is legitimate.
I want to ask you about a phenomenon that I have noticed lately, that junk email, that's been coming since as long as there has been email. We all get tons and tons of this. But something I've noticed recently, and I don't understand why spammers would even do this, they're offering you a free certificate to Amazon, or they're talking about buying SUVs at good prices, whatever it might be, the offer. But then instead of having a carefully crafted phishing email, they insert nonsense language, which no one would look at and think twice about erasing. So what is the motivation? What's going on with that phenomenon?
So I'll tell you that anytime that you see something weird pop into your inbox and it's spam, and you obviously recognize it as, well, this isn't real, I will tell you that somewhere out there, this is obviously working. Even with all the nonsense in there, and, you know, we sit here and say, oh, that's weird, I don't know why they would do that. It's obviously working. Otherwise, they wouldn't be doing this. Now, the kind of tactical reasons for having that type of stuff in there is this is the way that the attackers are bypassing technical controls. So much of the technical controls that we hear about that have been deployed in enterprise networks are based on signatures. These are things that are known to be bad. And so by putting kind of random stuff in there, that is the attacker's attempt at throwing off kind of simplistic signature-based defenses.
So, for example, I'm reading this one for sending me ink. Never pay full price for printer ink. And then the text says, puppy, applicable, vassal, Jean, Francois, Pliskin, Bow, Yankees, Merino, Glacial. Nonsense language, but to a machine reading system, it doesn't look like anything bad, in other words.
Right. So if there's a centralized email server that is filtering out on repetitive messages over and over and over again, which is, you know, that's a pretty topical and simplistic way to identify junk email, maybe it would filter out, you know, the 10th one that basically passed through. But if I put in those nonsensical words that are different every single email, well, all those emails all of a sudden look a little bit different to a computer. And again, that's just the attacker trying to bypass filter rules.
I guess the conclusion here is phishing sensitivity really, really needs to go up a notch, a big notch in the federal government and in any large organization.
Yeah, if you look at the maturity that surrounds technical risk management, okay, we have IVNV, we have CNA in the government world, in the retail world, there's PCI DSS. There's a lot of different scales and a lot of mature models to basically manage risk. And again, we've done a good job at a lot of technical risk, but users are now becoming just more and more part of the equation. And so what we're basically working on is the ability to basically score users, to measure vulnerability, and then to remediate the most vulnerable assets. Okay, and again, we're talking about users here. And so this could be more focused training on the users that exhibit increased vulnerability. This could be more frequent training, whereas the users who are lower risk, maybe they won't get trained as as much. And you can also take all of this data and feed it back into all of the technical systems, all the technical controls that you have, that if you have, you know, who your most riskiest users are and the most high-value targets, you can treat them differently from a network perspective in order to protect them. So there's some really interesting things coming. It's about to get really interesting.
Trevor Hawthorne is Chief Technology Officer at Wombat Security Technologies. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
You can read more and share this interview with colleagues at federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends.